and welcome to another episode of Work Beyond Mac. I'm your host, Jason Cipriani. On this episode, I talk with Jesse Trujillo, a radio broadcast engineer for Altitude Sports Radio. That's the radio station here in Colorado that carries all Denver Nuggets, Colorado Avalanche, and Colorado Rapids games. Jesse's setup caught my attention on Twitter a few weeks ago when he shared a video of an iPad Pro at the core of his audio mixing equipment. When I saw the video, I knew I had to talk to him. I reached out on Twitter and he kindly agreed to chat with me. Before I welcome Jesse to the show, I just want to take a moment to thank the sponsor of this episode, Kensington. If you've never checked out any of their Apple accessories, including docks, rugged cases, locks, and privacy screens, please be sure to do that at kensington.com. I also want to take a moment to thank you for downloading and listening to Work Beyond Mac. If you enjoy the show, please consider leaving a review or a rating when you're done. Hey, Jesse, welcome to episode 5 of Work Beyond Mac. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine, Jason. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. It's, you know, it's spring here in Colorado, which is a mix of one day it's a blizzard, the next day it's really nice. I think today is supposed to be nice, but who knows? Who knows what the afternoon will bring? Well, before we dive into a whole bunch of fun iPad stuff, why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners so they kind of have a better idea of who you are and what you do?
Okay, I'm Jesse Trujillo. 39, born and raised in Denver, Colorado. And for work, I am a radio broadcast engineer for Altitude Sports Radio. So I do two different things for my job. Basically, and we can dig deeper into this as we go, but just to give a brief introduction, I work in the mornings at a radio station where I help produce and, you know, gather guests for our radio show, which is on Altitude Radio 92.5. And it's also on Altitude TV as well. It's simulcast basically on TV. I do that in the mornings. And then my main gig is I do the radio engineering for play-by-play broadcasts for the Denver Nuggets, the Colorado Avalanche, and the Colorado Rapids. So that's basically what I do. I'm a father of four and I love sports and I've been in radio for almost 8 years now.
That's awesome, man. That has to keep you pretty busy. So that morning show starts kind of early, doesn't it? And then you have late nights with the games, you know, depending on if it's a night game.
Yeah. So the morning show starts out with Brett Kane and that kicks off at 6 a.m. So I'm usually there by 5:30. And like you said, like a late night, sometimes, you know, I'm out of the arena on a game night that starts at 7. I may be out of there by 10:30. And then with, like, say, a Nuggets game, which might tip off at 8:40 on TNT, I might be out of there by 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Man, those are long days and split up, too, if you're going in early in the morning and then late at night. I can't imagine what that lifestyle is like. Hats off to you, man, for doing stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle that's kind of hard to get adjusted to at first. You have to take advantage of napping sometimes.
Right.
But the advantages of it usually pre-COVID was basically you'd be busy from October to hopefully mid-May, you know, depending on how far the teams can make it in the playoffs. And then I have like a real light schedule from basically June to October when there's no hockey or basketball going on. So it's 7 months of real busyness. And then the 5 months, it's kind of like kicked back a little bit.
That's awesome. There's plenty of time for the family during the summer, kind of like a teacher's schedule.
Exactly. That's how I put it sometimes.
Awesome. Yeah. So how I found you was on Twitter, probably about 10 days ago, a week ago now, you actually posted a short video clip of behind the scenes of a broadcast during an Avalanche game with Connor McGahee announcing a live road game for the Avalanche and you doing audio mixing for that game. Is that a good way to phrase what you do, the audio mixing?
Yeah, so I basically am mixing Connor's voice with, on that game, fake crowd noise, the ice effects, PA announcer, So I mix all that, make sure it's all at a good level. The ice effects isn't louder than Connor. Connor's not trying to step over to talk too loud because the ice effects is in his ear. So yeah, I do that. And usually Connor is usually by himself, but some teams with the Nuggets, and I also do the visiting teams as well. So sometimes it may be a color analyst and a play-by-play guy and a sideline reporter. So yeah, I'm just mixing it. And the final result is what you hear over the radio. And on that video, I was kind of giving a behind the scenes of how it sounded like if I didn't have my headphones on, because there's no one obviously in the arena because it's a road game. So it's basically Connor and I, and it's just him screaming. So you don't hear any of the ice effects or any of that. But when I would put the mix through on the recording, you could hear what Connor hears in his ear, what I hear in my ear, and what's going over the radio, as opposed to what it just sounds like if we were standing right next to each other.
Yeah. And the video was surprising. You know, the first time I watched it, I was just like, wow, that's a huge sound difference. Like you said, it was this, it went back and forth between what's put over the radio and then what you could hear in the booth with the divider between you two due to COVID, I assume. And it was a big difference between the two, and it sounded great both ways. Obviously over the radio sounded a lot better, but what caught my eye and the reason I reached out to you is doing all of what you just described. Sounds like you'd have some pretty fancy equipment in order to achieve it. But in your video, there's an iPad linked up to swim mixing equipment, and you're using that to make adjustments for this live broadcast, which immediately I was like, wait a minute, I have to talk to this guy. I have to talk to him. And so that's why I reached out, and thank you so much for, you know, allowing some random stranger on Twitter to reach out to you and ask if you want to be on a show. I truly appreciate that. So I guess I'll post a link to the tweet in the show's description, so when people listen to this in the future, they can go and check out that video and see exactly what we're talking about. But let's start by what kind of iPad I saw in the video, or what iPad you're currently using now, and then we'll kind of dive into the workflow here in a few minutes.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm currently using, and what was used in that video is an iPad Pro, I guess what they call the 2020. So it's the newest iPad, and it's the 12.9 version.
And so is that your entire iPad setup? Obviously, you, or hopefully you use the iPad for other work-related or personal-related items outside of broadcasting. So do you have like the magic keyboard, or do you have any accessories that come along, or that come along with you wherever you take the iPad?
Yeah. So going back to what I was using that game. So the mixer and everything, the app is on the iPad, but it's the app is called Xair. So it's a mixer, digital mixer, basically made by Behringer, and it's called the Xair 18. So it has 18 channels and everything like that. And basically it connects to my iPad either via, it has a built-in Wi-Fi, and I can grab that and it'll read the mixer on my iPad that way, or you can use an Ethernet. So I use a Ethernet cable coming out of that into my iPad using basically the Ethernet cable goes into the plug and then it goes into the USB-C on my iPad. So it can connect those two different ways. I do have the magic keyboard that I have all the time with me. And the other thing I use for the broadcast is an Apple Pencil Generation 2.
Yeah, so it's a pretty complicated setup once you start attaching all these different things. But at the core of it, it sounds like you have pretty much anyone who has an iPad Pro, they have the Magic Keyboard, they have an Apple Pencil. It sounds like a basic setup as far as that goes. So let's take a minute to talk about what it was like leading up to you figuring out you could use the iPad in the broadcast booth for a live broadcast. You know, was there like a slow realization that the iPad could do what you needed it to do? Was there, I like to call it, an aha moment where it kind of clicked with you that, hey, you know, I could actually use this and prefer to use this over a computer? What was that process like for you?
I would like actually say it was an aha moment, because it wasn't something that I even had in the back of my head of knowing that there was a digital mixer that was out there that could do this. Yeah. It was more like I was at a pawn shop and I was looking at bikes. I think it was, you know, I was trying to buy me a used bike. And all of a sudden I look over the counter and I see like this box, and I can't remember the name of the company, but it was basically a digital mixer, but it didn't use an iPad or anything. It had just its own built-in screen on the mixer. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, oh, that's pretty cool. So like I saw the price of it and everything, and I went home and I Googled it. And then as I start Googling it, you know, all the other Mackies and Behringers, all their digital mixers start popping up. And then I started thinking in my head, because with my broadcast, especially for an Avalanche game, they cut down the size of our booths. So having three of us stand next to each other in a booth doing a broadcast. And at the time I'm using an analog mixer, which is, you know, two times the size of using an iPad. It just takes up a lot of space and all the other equipment. It goes up on the counter. I started to research more and I'm like, you know what, if I can get this iPad mixer to work, you know, it would save space. If I have to, I can stand in the back of the room, hold my iPad in my hands and be able to control the mix without being right in front of the guy's ways. Because there's a lot of times where they have paperwork and they have their own devices, laptops, and it would save a whole bunch of room. And so I was like, well, if I could get that to work, this would be perfect for me. You know, I could stand in the back of the room. The cool thing is I can also set up my own Wi-Fi network with a router, and I could walk around the whole arena. And basically, if one of the guys at the station was like, hey, we're going to do an interview real fast, how fast can you get back to the booth? And I can't be there for 5 minutes. And they're like, he's going to be there in 2 minutes. I could literally walk around with my iPad and grab that Wi-Fi network and control that mixer from anywhere in the arena. So at that moment, I was like, wow, I could get this to work. And that wasn't even digging into how to use the mixer. That was just kind of like just little stuff at that point.
So was it then after that is when you bought that? Because you have to have the physical mixer, right? That allows for the pathway to send stuff to your iPad. So did you buy them like together at the same time for this sole purpose?
So what I had at that time was I had my MacBook at that time, and okay, it could connect to the MacBook. So I did the MacBook at first and I bought the mixer, but I bought it used because I'm the type of person, I try to buy something used so I know I'm going to like it first before I buy something new. Yeah. So I still have the used one that I have, so it hasn't given me any problems, but I used it with the Mac and I liked it with the Mac, but I started to think in my head, I'm like, I think I would like it better because it's kind of a pain in the butt to carry a MacBook around. And sure, if I have to connect to it, you know, carry that around, when I was like, you know what, I'm going to try a iPad. So I bought me an iPad mini at first. So I was using the iPad mini, I think it was like the fourth gen, and it was nice, but it was too small. Like you could control it and everything, but like I'm the type where I'm like, I want to see as much on the screen as I can, because I would have to scroll to the left and right. But with the bigger iPad, it just worked so much better where I could see everything. So at that time I had when I first got the mixer, I had an iPad Pro, but I think it was like the second generation one, which worked out just fine. And I was using the Apple Pencil first generation with that as well.
So when you're listening to the broadcast with headphones, are you using AirPods or what are you using to monitor it in your headphones, or what kind of headphones?
Okay. So yeah. So, you can't use your AirPods because the sound doesn't come from the iPad. The sound is coming from the physical mixer, which is like located about 15 feet away. So I can listen to different ways and different mixes. So I can listen, I have one set of headphones that goes into one, what we call a aux mix. So that aux mix is just my mix where I can see how loud each channel is for effects, the PA announcer Connor. So I can bring up each one of those independently without messing around with the mix that's going over the air to Connor's headphones to whoever else is listening. So I have like a pair of Sennheiser headphones I use for that. And then I have another set of headphones that I use for the main mix that I can, like, this is the headset I'm listening to that I know is going over the air. So I have that one, and that one has a built-in headset so I can talk back to the radio station. I can talk to Connor in his ear. So that's my main headset. But the cool thing about that mixer is with that main headset, I can, inside that mixer on the iPad, I can listen to what the mix sounds like in Connor's ear. I can see hear what the mix sounds like in the play-by-play's ear. So if Connor's like, hey, give me some more effects, but turn down Peter in my ear, I can go into his mix with that same headset without changing headsets, go to a setting and then adjust it to where I think it sounds good, and then see how it sounds in his ear. So there's so much you can do with that mixer using an iPad. That's crazy.
So have you been in a situation where you've had to use the iPad to mix an interview and you're not actually in the booth with them?
Yeah, it's happened, I think, 2 times. One was like, it was a phone interview. So we couldn't, you know, I'll give it away. It was I think it was Jamal Murray. We were doing a phone interview. And with something like that, it's not something where, you know, you're waiting there for him. It could be like, hey, he can call from 11:15 to 11:50. So you have like a 35-minute window that you're working with. So, you know, I went to step away, you know, thinking like, okay, I still have 25 minutes that in the window, let me go check something. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get 2 elevator stories down and, you know, you're on the first level and you need to get up to the press box, and they're like, he's on the phone, like, pot him up, pot Connor, you know, like whoever it was up, and let's get going. So, you know, I'm just walking around and doing it at that point. At that point, you can't listen to the mix. It's basically, I had the levels kind of adjusted to where I thought they were going to be. And all I had to do was unmute the mics and then pot up the station mix. Because if you have the station playing while you're doing the interview, they'll hear the radio station in their ears and it can be kind of confusing. So I can like mute that and unmute it at the same time. So I couldn't listen to it, but I had a basic idea of what it could sound like level wise. And then I can control their mics, turning them on and off.
That's fascinating. And that was going to be my next question, actually, is how you remotely monitored that. But I guess just years of experience and knowing where your levels are at or where they should be at kind of come into play there. But still, you're in a huge sports arena if you're at the Pepsi Center, right? And you're wandering around able to do this on an iPad from anywhere in the arena is well, I guess it's Ball Arena now. Old habits, right?
Exactly. Hey, I still say Pepsi Center every once in a while, but yeah, Ball Arena.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, this is fascinating to me. Here I am, you know, I do a lot of work on my iPad as well. It's my primary device, but when it comes time to record a podcast, and look, I only have 2 people and it's not being broadcast anywhere, I go back to my Mac in order to record it, and you're controlling an entire radio broadcast from the iPad, which is kind of silly to me because I have to go back to my Mac in order to do this. But that all comes down to how the audio was recorded and stored, which I think in some parts of that video, or in one part of that video, I did see a MacBook on the counter. What exactly does that play in all this?
Okay, yeah. So you mentioned recording the audio of the broadcast. So what I do is, I mean, generally, obviously the whole broadcast is being recorded and saved at the radio station. So that's like the main broadcast. But what I'm doing is I work with some of the Altitude TV and Avalanche photographers. So sometimes they may be like, hey, that goal that Nathan MacKinnon just scored, I want to use Connor's call over that as opposed to the TV call, or if it's a national game or something like that. So I'm recording it into my MacBook. And if there's a goal call, I'll immediately grab that audio on my MacBook, save the audio, and then text it or email it to whoever I need to. So they have that audio within minutes of it being, you know, recorded. Cause if I have to wait for them to put it up either on the FTP site at our station, or for them to email me, you know, I'm dependent on someone else and they're still doing their other job. Sometimes it could be 10 to 15 minutes, or it could be at intermission that I get that sound. So I tried to just record it myself, and, you know, and I could still monitor the mix of the game and cut up the audio using, you know, I have my earbuds in, and I have the, from the Mac, getting that sound. And I also have my broadcast headphones on at the same time. So I can listen to two different things in two different ears and still be able to do what I'm doing without messing up. Or I guess, like, I know if I mess up, but like people listening on the radio wouldn't know I was messing up at all. But so yeah, I use that because as much as the iPad can do for my broadcast and everything, the one thing that I still have to use my Mac for is recording, because I use Adobe Audition on that. And I still haven't found anything that I could use with the iPad on that. And the last thing I want to be doing is recording and using my mixer on the same device too. So it is nice to have the MacBook there to be able to record it. So how it works is I have audio coming, a different aux mix coming from the physical mixer, an XLR cable going into a Zoom. It's an H6 audio recorder. So that's recording it as well. And then I use an interface that goes into the MacBook, which is ultimately recording it as well. So I have in the broadcast booth, I have two things recording the broadcast at once.
Yeah, I have a USB mic that I record the podcast on right now. And I use a program called Audio Hijack, which basically can, like it says, hijack any audio in or out of a Mac to record it and mix it in channels and mono, stereo, all that stuff. Stuff you probably know a lot more about than me. I know you know a lot more about than me. And it works really well. And I wish there was something like that that could run in the background on an iPad that would make podcasting like this using a USB mic, you know, totally possible and easy to do on an iPad, but it's just not there yet in that regard. So when you said you do the audio clips that are played over video, and then those are shared all over. I've seen them on social media. Just the last game, I think JT Comfort scored a goal, and Connor's audio of it squeaking by was played. So that was something that you had a hand in. Then that audio clip came from you, was sent to the social team, and then was posted to the app's timeline.
Yeah, because if it's something where, like, if I don't send them the audio, they're just going to use the natural TV audio of Altitude TV, which is still our TV broadcasters and Mark Mosier and Peter McNabb. But yeah, Sometimes, you know, Connor has a great call for JT Comfort where he says something like 877 goals now, or I can't really exactly.
Yeah, it's 877 goals now. Yeah, he does it every time.
So he does that every time, you know, so it's kind of unique to like what people like to hear. So sometimes they're like, yeah, let's use Connor's radio call. And if they wait for us to post it at the radio station or get it later on, it could be the next morning where I can have that audio to them within minutes. Awesome. And I use it. And so I'm communicating with his name's Peter Aragon. He works for Avalanche 360 and Altitude TV. So he'll text me and be like, hey, send me that. And I'll text it to him. And then he'll get that up there as soon as possible. So it's something where I always send them the audio after each game, but I think within the last 2 weeks, he's been like, hey, if we can get these up quicker, let's do it. So then that's when I started to use, to actually record it and save the audio and clip it and send it to him right away.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I want to ask you a question that doesn't have to do with your workflow right now, but it's something I've been curious through this entire pandemic. I've been curious about what it's like being in an arena like Ball Arena without any fans at all, like just you guys. How weird is that, whether it's a road game or a home game?
I'll start off with the road game, and I'll go back to the summer to when it was actually like in a bubble.
Yeah,
that was kind of that. At first it was, you know, like real kind of like shocking, because you're kind of like, wow, like literally there's just security people here, Connor and I, and, you know, maybe some executives in the building. And at that time in the summer, man, and looking in the parking lot, there was maybe 20 people in the whole building. And you're just, you know, it's the first time we're ever doing something like this. So you're in a building and it's echoing and it's kind of like eerie, because you're used to having, you know, 17, 18,000 people there. So yeah, like with a road game, even now, it's still, you know, very weird, like, to get used to. But now there's, like, on a road game, there's still some people there because they do the TV broadcast from there. There's a lot more security. There's people cleaning the arena now. So I've gotten adjusted to a little bit more and calling it. I don't physically call the game off the monitor, but Connor is, but like having to do that was an adjustment because you're not being able to see the line changes and everything that you would see if you were watching a game in person. So yeah, that was an adjustment. And then now with having home games and no fans, is definitely different too, because you get the music back in the arena and you're actually watching a physical live game, which is cool. So during the game, I really don't notice that there's no fans there, I guess, because I hear the fake crowd noise in my ears. Right. And I'm watching the game. Where you notice it most is when it goes to a commercial break and you're used to having like the in-game host playing games with fans and, you know, the cameras showing funny people on the Jumbotron and all that stuff. That's where it's weird to me, is because you go to a commercial break and it's just music playing and you're just watching. I'm literally just watching the guys on the bench talk to each other and talking right. to Connor.
Yeah. And it's still silent, somewhat silent, at least in the arena.
Yeah, it is. And then obviously last night was the first time that I had been to a sporting event where there was actual fans of some sort. And even that, like walking, I guess my first reaction was when I first parked, noticing there was more cars there, and then walk into the arena and there's ushers and there's people greeting you. And you're like, wow, I haven't seen that face in a year. And then, you know, and then smelling the actual food and all that, like, to me, like, I think it was more of adjustment to me than fans that hadn't been to a game in a year, because the last time they were there, there was fans there and the ushers, like, I haven't seen some of these people in a year. And then, you know, like, it's a lot more packed and everything like that. So yeah, it's like in all three phases, with no fans, with fans, and then obviously on the road. So all three things was like a definite change for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. That has to be, oh, kind of surreal, I guess, would be the way to put it. I'm going to take a quick break for an ad from our sponsor. And then when we come back, I want to dive into other use cases you have for your iPad outside of broadcasting. Or if there's something we haven't touched on broadcasting yet, I want to dive into that as well. So we'll be right back. Today's podcast is sponsored by Kensington, maker of the Black Belt Second Degree Rugged Case for iPad, the ultimate case to protect your iPad while on the go. This thing is tough. It features military-grade drop protection, full access to all ports, an infinitely variable kickstand, a retractable hand strap that allows it to lie flat on a table or desk, a 2-year warranty, and more. It's ideal for active environments. Check it out at Kensington.com, along with their other Apple accessories, including docks, locks, and privacy screens. All right, welcome back. And Jesse, during the break, you were telling me about the audio mixing app and how it allows you to set profiles for different announcers or radio personalities, especially for visiting teams. So can we kind of dive into that a little bit and give us some more information?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, my main job is doing the radio broadcast at Ball Arena, but pre-COVID, I was doing just visiting team's radio broadcast. So how that works is, so say the Detroit Red Wings came to town and I would set up their broadcast and they send what they call like a fact sheet over. That fact sheet will tell me, hey, you're going to have Dave do play-by-play. John's going to be color. We're going to have a interview from the locker room after the first period and after the game if they win. Here's what the guys like. Dave, he likes to call the game, but he likes to call it and he just likes to hear John in his ear. He doesn't like to hear the ice effects. He just likes it dry. But John, he likes all that stuff in his ear. He likes to hear the ice effects. He likes to hear the PA. He likes to hear the music in his background. So the good thing you can do with this, with the Xair mixer and the app on the iPad or however you use it, is they have a thing which is called snapshots. So what I can do is I can set that mix up and have a whole mix set up for Dave where he can still hear the radio station. He can hear me talking to him. He can hear John talking to him. And then he hears nothing else except if we do that interview. And then I can have a different mix set up for John where he has the ice effects. He can hear the PA, the referee come over. He can hear all that stuff. So at that point, we basically have a mix for me, a mix for Dave, a mix for John. And then there's a mix that's going to the radio station. And then another mix that's going to the locker room for the player or coach, whoever's going to join for an interview. So you do the game, you have all that set up, you get all your settings, their EQ settings, how loud they like each other in each other's ears, get all that set up, do the whole radio broadcast. And then you go to your snapshot, and then I can go to the snapshot, hit save, save Detroit Red Wings, and then go on with my night. The next night I may be doing a Utah Jazz game, and they may have a whole separate mix, and it's basketball, so it's totally different, and get all that set up, save their mix as a snapshot, and say next year or 2 weeks from now, the Detroit Red Wings are back in town. I can basically go back to the snapshots, load up Detroit Red Wings, and basically load those same settings that I had from last time and just do minor adjustments to that mix to where, you know, I'm not having to restart from scratch. And it could be funny because you can look at it and it'll say like Utah Jazz and you hit snapshots and it literally, oh, load up the Detroit Red Wings. And all the little faders start moving around, and and I'll kind of like go behind the scenes. So like on an analog mixer, you'll basically lay out a piece of tape and you'll mark, you get with a Sharpie, like Dave, John, crowd effects, and you kind of label what each channel is. While on this mixer, you could basically go and label and you type in their name. You can give it like different colors, make it color coordinated. So it's kind of cool, like all this stuff. And I haven't even hit like what this mixer can do. Like you can do concerts with this, live stage shows. So I don't even dip into like all the stuff it can do, but for what I needed to do, I can get everything done pretty easily.
It sounds like it ultimately leads to a more consistent broadcast then, if you're not having to put layers of tape with names on it and take them off each time, and then you know, you're able to pull up those old settings without having to mess around with it too much.
Yeah. And the cool thing is, and I did use this one time. So if someone else has this same mixer at a different building, so like I have a friend named Ray Regal, he works the Vegas Knights games. I could take my iPad and go to that arena on his mixer. And when you load up your mixer or your iPad, you could either grab the settings that I have saved in my iPad for the mixer, or I can grab his settings.
Wow. This sounds like a pretty impressive piece of tech, dude.
Yeah. So I don't even have to take my physical mixer with me. I can take just my iPad and pull up my settings and just plug in the different channels that I need. And it'll pull up my settings without having to mess with his mixer or take a mixer with me. So both of us, we were both working the Tahoe game back in February. We each had our digital mixers, the same ones that we had there. And the things that this thing can do, the cool thing I saw that it could do too is for concerts, you can have the main mix here. You can give an iPad to another guy that's behind the stage and he can go onto the same Wi-Fi network and he can control, say one of the guitarists mixes in his ear and the guitarist can just be like, give me more of the drums, and that guy can control it from behind the stage using an iPad.
Yeah, this is fascinating stuff. I love hearing about it because it's stuff that, you know, you see these giant, using concert as an example, you see these giant mixing boards with a microphone, and you know they're communicating with each other, but the fact that you're able to take it into something as small as an iPad that's then portable and still control all of it, like I said, it's just fascinating to me. So thanks for sharing all of that behind the scenes in info on broadcast mixing. But I know you use your iPad for more than just that. So let's kind of dissect and take apart how else you use your iPad outside of the actual broadcast mixing.
Okay, so I'll go kind of like what I do for the morning show that I mentioned that I work at with Vic Mosier and Brett Kane in the mornings. We use Twitch, basically, is how we do the broadcast, because Brett's in studio and the other two guys, Vic Lombardi and Mark Mosier, are at their houses. So we basically go on Zoom. So that's an app there. We use Zoom, and we'll all kind of like see each other on the Zoom. And from Zoom, it's going into Twitch, and that's done on a computer at work. But I still pull up Twitch on my iPad so I can monitor what it looks like on my iPad. So I'll use Twitch app on my iPad. The other thing I'll use in the morning on my iPad is I'll use iMovie, because I may cut something that's funny on Twitch. I may cut like a 2-minute video, and then I'll edit it with iMovie. So those are the apps that I use for the morning show on my iPad. And then as far as like work stuff that's related, obviously I use the XR app for my mixer. I use a FTP manager app. That's the name of the FTP manager. And I use that app to upload the NBA and NHL highlights. So anyone from like the San Jose Sharks, if they want to grab a goal call that they want to play during their intermission, they can grab it off of there. And I can do the same thing. I can go and say, we were doing like the best of highlights or something. I can go and grab a New York Rangers goal call, or I can go back to like 2013 and grab Matt Duchene goal call. You know, I can grab whatever I need to off of this FTP manager for Nuggets and Avalanche on there. So I use that. When I do work the visiting team broadcast, I have to invoice them for the broadcast that I do. So I use Tiny Invoice. That's what that app is called. So I can go on there, put a logo. I can put my business name. I can put my address and all that. And I can list like, hey, we did this radio broadcast on this date. Here's what I charge. Here's what I did for the broadcast. So I can send out invoices from that using the email.
So for Tiny Invoice, I have to invoice clients too. I'm a freelance writer, so my entire life is turning in work and then invoicing for it. And I use Wave Apps. It's a platform that has a whole bunch of other possibilities, but I use specifically their invoicing platform. And they have an all right iPad app, but I usually use the website instead because it's just easier to use on iPad. Tiny Invoice, is it built into its own platform, or is it something like that integrates with QuickBooks or something else?
That I do not know, but I think it's just its own little thing that you use. I've never seen it have QuickBooks or anything like that.
Gotcha.
But I like it because I can get it from my, it'll sync up with my phone or my Mac or the iPad for that. So I do use that a lot, not so much this last year with no teams traveling and all that. So,
sure, that makes sense.
Yep. And then some other stuff I do use for work, Teams. I use Teams app on here. I use another program called Splashtop, where I can be at my house and get on Splashtop, and I can go onto one of the computers at work and can control anything that I need to. So kind of like it's a mirror and mirrors all that. So I'll use that as well. Let's see, what else do I use? I use Photoshop, iMovie, another app called Video Shop that I'll use. And I use that one because it'll sync up with my phone, but I use iMovie more than anything. Canon Print. So I can print photos to my Canon printer. And I think that's about it. I do use, and this isn't work related, I do use an app called TomPlay that I use when I'm playing the drums. So I'm learning the drums. So it's a pretty cool app that lets you pick, like, you know, like you can pick a Led Zeppelin song and pick whatever level you're at, and it'll show you the notes to play as you're going along, and you can record it. So I use that a lot, but that's not work related.
That's okay. We can dive into personal uses as well. But speaking of playing drums, have you tried like the lessons that are built into GarageBand? I know about them. I've kind of looked at them, but I'm not a musician by any means. So I haven't like dove into them, you know. Have you tried those at all?
So I haven't used it to learn how to play the drums, because I was taking lessons in person with a guy once the pandemic hit. That was how I was taking up my time, because there was no sports. So I was riding a bike a lot, and I was learning how to play the drums. And I still am not playing the drums yet. I'm still learning because I took some time off. But I did hook up like an interface on GarageBand onto my drums, because I have like an electric drum kit. So you can control, you can change like the way the drums sound through GarageBand. So I did use it that way, but not on like it teaching me how to play the drums. I guess I haven't dug that deep into it yet.
Gotcha. I mean, it sounds like you do quite a bit from your iPad overall, but at the end of the day, like we were talking about earlier, there's some stuff that the Mac is better suited for, like recording the audio that you can then clip and send out to the social team or whoever else wants to see, hear it or use it. What other areas in your daily workflow do you have to go back to the Mac for?
Honestly, I was just telling this to my girlfriend yesterday. I told her, you know what? If my iPad could get Adobe Audition on it, or I can find a program that would cut audio the way I need it to and as quick as I need it to, I could probably ditch my MacBook. Because
really?
It could do, I do everything on it. Like, you know, like Word, Adobe, Excel, OneNote, Google Photos, OneDrive, Google Drive, all that stuff, you know, I could do on the iPad, that I can do the same stuff on my MacBook. It's just as fast as I need to use the audio editor and that program, it's just, I'm so fast at it now that using it on my MacBook is the only way I can do it. And I haven't found anything I could do it on the iPad any faster. That's the only thing I use it for, honestly, right now.
Wow. I use an app called Ferrite that is an audio editing app to edit my podcasts and lay in different tracks, like the introduction and the ad and all that. I don't know how fast it would be, but it may be something for you to check out. There's a free trial. I think it's 2 weeks before they start charging you. I believe it's that long, or maybe it's stripped down a little bit, but it's called Ferrite, Ferrite. And it uses Apple Pencil. Is how I use it to edit and, you know, take random sounds out and whatever else, but it allows you to cut down clips pretty quick. I don't know if it would be quicker for you because you're mixing the audio on the iPad and all of that during a live broadcast, but maybe worth checking out to see if it does work for you. I mean, that's quite a big statement, you know, and a lot of us are at that point where the iPad does 98% of our workflow. And there's just a few things left that the iPad isn't quite there yet for to make up. And so the Mac or a PC or, you know, some other computer has to fill in that role. But if the fact that you only use or rely on the Mac to record and then edit those clips really quick is, I mean, that's pretty big deal.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, if I could get it, you know, to work on that, and I'm downloading that Ferrite right now, that would be a game changer. But like I said, I had mentioned earlier, like I would have to see like how it does with the mixer running in the background, because I know the iPad can handle that. I'm just afraid, like, if I exit the program, if it's going to disconnect me from the mixer, because that can happen at times. Is if you go to respond to a text message and you're on there too long, you have to reconnect to the mixer. If you're using it through the Wi-Fi client, if you're using it through the Ethernet, it's pretty strong to where you don't have to worry about it. But there is certain things, and you can't notice during your broadcast. Like, it doesn't just cut the sound down. It's just you have to reconnect. But say like there's a goal call going on and we want to go down to the PA announcer. If I have to reconnect, I can't control it to bring up the PA announcer, you know, unless I'm connected to it. So there's just little things, like if I'm gone too long from the actual mixer being on the screen, it can disconnect you. But if this can record in the background and I have it, and say like during an intermission, I can cut up the audio, that would be a game changer right there.
Yeah, you'll have to mess with it. I don't know if it'll be able to record in the background, but I haven't messed with the recording features of it. I'll only import my audio files and then edit them. And I've really enjoyed it. I was, to be 100% honest, really intimidated coming into starting my own podcast and having to learn how to edit it and whatnot. But Fairrights made it really easy for me to do. You know, I've been on podcasts for the last 2 years for ZDNet.com. But we have a producer who handles all the audio. I just record and they take care of the rest, you know? So this has been a pretty steep learning curve, which I've enjoyed. It's been a fun experience. So I guess before we close out here, I have a couple more questions for you, not necessarily about your workflow, but maybe the future of iPad. So there's a lot of rumors going around right now that Apple is going to announce, and perhaps before this episode even goes to published, announce the new iPad Pro, and it's supposed to have, you know, a better display, perhaps a Thunderbolt port, so you have, you know, be able to connect more accessories to it, or even an external display, and hopefully two external display support. So if you had to pick one or two things that you would want to see hardware or software wise in a new iPad Pro that could help you out on a daily basis, what would you pick?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think that going back to the Thunderbolt would be ideal for me too. I think that would be perfect. And then I guess just for, not for work purposes, but like if you can get an external monitor, I think that would be really cool. Instead of, I guess how you can do it now is you mirror your screen, which is still kind of cool. But yeah, I think that would be really nice on it. And other than that, I mean, right now, I mean, I think what it does now is far more than, you know, what I need it for sometimes. And the Apple Pencil works flawlessly with it, especially using the mixer, you know, instead of my fingers, I'm not always smudging the screen. And with the Magic Keyboard is, I mean, the little trackpad, it mirrors basically what my MacBook does. And like, I can go back and forth and not even feel I'm on the iPad as opposed to the MacBook when it comes to using the keyboard and the physical trackpad.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that. I'm hoping for external display support, true external display support as well. You know, I've talked about it on this show before, as well as other podcasts. The mirroring stuff now works, and that's primarily how I work on my iPad with it connected to another display. But those black bars are incredibly annoying. And the apps that truly take advantage of the APIs built into iPadOS for an external display are few and far between, including Apple's own apps. iMovie is one of them that comes to mind in Photos, and both of them, when they're connected to an external monitor, it's just, it's not the best experience. Well, I'll leave it at that. So yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. And then like, also like there's a couple of apps that I use and I'll mirror it to my Apple TV,
sure.
But the app, you'll still see like the little bar at the bottom that you see on the iPad and the time. It doesn't take it full screen like it should, like if it were to mirror. So I think if they could fix that, it'd be perfect, because like it'll still show like, to me, if I'm mirroring it, I just want it to mirror the video. I don't want it to mirror like if I get a text message and it pops up on the screen still. And it does that on certain apps. On some stuff it doesn't, but like say for Altitude Now, if I'm watching the Avs game on my iPad and I'm mirroring it to my TV, it'll still pop up saying like you have a text message at this time, or you know, I just want the video to pop up. Right. The other thing that would make it handy too, and I don't know if there's something I'm doing wrong, but when I'm trying to mirror, say, the Avalanche or Nuggets game from my iPad on Altitude Now app and I'm putting it on the TV, if I shut my iPad down and it goes to black screen, it's shuts the app down and then it stops mirroring. It won't play in the background. So I basically have to have the iPad up and watching it at the same time that it's up on the TV.
From my understanding, because apps like HBO Max or Netflix, that doesn't happen because AirPlay support is built directly into the app. There's an actual AirPlay icon built into it that'll send it to the Apple TV and it works from there. But like the Altitude Now app, if anything interrupts that stream, even if you were to use messages and slide over, it closes down the entire feed. And so there's not direct support for AirPlay in it. So you're mirroring your display to the Apple TV, which once your display goes to sleep, then the feed goes to sleep as well. So it's really like I said, from my understanding, the developer has to support that feature and it's something they have to build into it. It's something I would love for an Apple TV app for Altitude Now or for AirPlay support in order to watch the Avs games. That would be huge for me. But yeah, so that's to answer your question. It's something the developer has to build into it.
Yeah, that'll be perfect if they can get that done.
Absolutely. I have one last question for you and then I'll let you go back to your day. I think the Avs play tonight, so I'm sure you're going to get a nap in before that. But and it actually has to do with the Avs. I am a huge Avs fan. I have been since they moved to Colorado in 96 and won the cup. And I have followed them through the good and the bad. And right now is very good for the team. It's been a fun year to watch, even though it's a shortened season. So I guess my question to you is, are they going to win the cup this year? What do you think?
If they can honestly have Grubauer playing the way that he's playing now, and if they can get a solid backup goaltender, yes, I think they can win the cup and stay healthy, because there's not a team that can stay with them as many shots as they're putting up and as fast as they get around. I mean, they're keeping some of these teams, I think, to like 15 shots the last game.
Yeah.
And so it's not putting a lot on Grubauer, but you can obviously see once they get the other backup goaltenders playing behind them, that's when the other teams are getting the points against us. And
yep.
And obviously it's not back like it was back in the day where you can have a goalie play every single game. I think if you have a guy that has actually started in the NHL before,
right,
be your back, right, backup goaltender, and you have two goalies, yeah, I think they can win the cup, because that's what's held them back. And we saw I think the overtime game when they played Vegas, and I think his name is Johansson. I think that's how you pronounce it. He couldn't even keep up with those guys in the shootout, and he looked like he was a high school goalie out there.
Yeah, he's 0-for-3. I mean, come on. You know, I agree with you. If the Avs can stay healthy, which has been the last two seasons, by the time we hit the playoffs, we're in a world of hurt. And we get a decent, either Frankie comes back, you know, our true backup goalie, which no one knows what's wrong with him or when he'll be back, at least publicly. And we get him back or we get a true backup goalie. It's going to be a fun postseason and a fun run towards that cup. So I'm hopeful. I'll be there cheering along, listening to Connor, which is your mix, on the radio some nights, and other nights watching on Altitude. All right, before we close out, Jesse, why don't you tell listeners where they could find you online, on Twitter or wherever else you want to be found?
Yeah, I am on Twitter at JTrujillo Radio. So that's JTRUJILLO Radio on Twitter. And that same username for Instagram as well. I post a lot of some of the engineering stuff that I do behind the scenes. And then obviously retweet content from sports and radio broadcasts that I do and stuff like that. And stuff from the morning show that I do for radio as well. So you can find me on those two platforms.
Awesome. It's been a fun time talking to you today, Jesse. I'd really appreciate you taking the time out of the middle of your day, you know, and taking time away from whatever else you would be doing right now. It's been a fun chatting with you.
Oh, I appreciate it too. Thanks, Jason.
So I have a couple confessions to make. First, this show was somewhat selfish of me. As I said during it, I've been a lifelong Avalanche fan, and I ate up every single piece of information Jesse shared about what it was like behind the scenes. Add in the fact that he does all of that mixing and all of the audio stuff directly from his iPad, and it truly blew my mind. Secondly, I have to apologize for the audio quality of this show. The irony isn't lost on me that the quality suffered on the very show that had an audio engineer on. I have taken some steps to hopefully fix the issues going forward. That said, if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review or a rating in your favorite podcast app. If you have any feedback, know someone who would make for a great guest, or just want to talk all things Apple and iPad, please feel free to reach me on Twitter at MrCippy, MrCippy. Find the show on Twitter at WorkBeyondMac, and follow or subscribe to the podcast in your favorite podcast app. Thanks for listening. Now, let's get to work.